Welcome to Casterbras. My name is Christian Corley. A little bit later on, James McLean is going to be joining me to discuss the main topic of the day, Doctor Who Series 15, and what is happening beyond that. After that, a bit of talk about the Beatles and some other things have caught my eye over the past few weeks, a little bit of Missing Believed Wiped, and yeah, pretty much the usual stuff that you normally find in a solo show. But yeah, I'm very glad to have James with me this week, if only for a little bit. Next week, I am discussing the upcoming series of Doctor Who with Philip Bates. That's in next week's show. We're aiming to bring you a series of reviews during Doctor Who Series 15. And Philip Bates is back after all of that, discussing some new book projects that he's got and a couple of other things as well. So do look out for those. As ever, everything comes out first on Patreon, ad-free, early, and occasionally with extra material. Unsurprisingly, the hot topic at the moment is Doctor Who Series 15 and how it is shaping up and could be shaping up to be not just the next series of Doctor Who, but potentially the last series on TV of Doctor Who, or certainly with Disney's involvement. There's been a couple of bits and bobs concerning Doctor Who in the media over the past few days. Now, they've come up in my various social feeds. So first of all, we've got Russell T. Davies expressing how the next series is ready and everything, and it's going to be going out. But there is nothing confirmed for a following series, a third series. The interview, he basically implies that there's no follow-up season yet commissioned. And he says that he hopes that they do get another series, obviously, of course. Now, is this the truth? Is there no new series of Doctor Who commissioned after Series 15? Or is it a bit of cynical headline grabbing by Russell T. Davies to get attention for the show? It's difficult to say. So, as promised earlier on, James McLean is now joining me to discuss what is happening with Doctor Who Series 15 and, well, beyond. You may or may not know that there's some Doctor Who stuff in the news. This show's coming back in a couple of weeks for Series 15, and there's been a press launch last night or on Monday night, I'm not sure which, certainly this week. And there's a lot of the stuff James and I were talking about a couple of weeks ago, or it was about a month ago now, I think. It's still out there, and it's still kind of rumbling on. There's a lot of uncertainty, isn't there, James?
So you tell me.
Yes.
I don't know.
So, I mean, Russell T. Davies has spoken about this to the Radio Times, and the general gist from that is that he says there's no meetings, nothing happening until Season 15 has aired, or Series 15 has aired. And that's unusual for this. Now, it could be that he's, you know, he might be just trying to drum up some publicity by hanging that little factoid out there, or it could be both, or it could be that there is nothing happening. I've been looking at a few YouTubers, reasonably serious YouTubers as well, not sort of like fly-by-nights or people who are known for trolling or anything like that, and there is a serious rumour mill that there is no Doctor Who series 16, I beg your pardon. There's nothing coming afterwards, which throws a lot of things into free fall, really, doesn't it? Because we talked about this a few weeks ago, talked about the thing about Disney possibly exiting, and Chudagatwa looking like he's possibly exited as well. 15 years ago, say, even 10 years ago, when Peter Capaldi was a Doctor, it seemed pretty secure, didn't it? And, you know, and that was a time when they'd lost a lot of audience because Peter Capaldi was, 30 years older than Matt Smith. And a lot of younger viewers left, but it still felt pretty secure. As this doesn't feel like a secure show. This doesn't feel like a TV show that the BBC is particularly as supportive of as it was maybe 2 years ago, but certainly 10 years ago and beyond.
But then that, to some degree, will be a reaction to a very uncertain market that we are looking at. I mean, even let's go back to Peter Capaldi. What are we looking at? 2014? Can you remember?
That was 2014 or 2017, I think. Yeah.
2014, 2017. Market's still massively changed. BBC's position in that market has massively changed. Mm-hmm. Since then, the BBC have said, you know, within the next 10 years, less than that. In fact, they'll plan to be entirely digital and there will be no linear BBC left. You know, we're talking about a totally different landscape. And on top of that, we're talking about a show which, as we've mentioned in previous podcasts, which was not made for the sort of cult sci sort of narrow band sci-fi audiences. It's always had to have this very wide appeal, now trying to find its space in a very different market. I don't know whether there's truth to the rumours. There's a lot of people which invariably, either because they don't like it as much now or because there is, for some journalists and critics, as good reasons to want to see it fail, because that creates a whole new story.
Yeah.
In terms of so much that's not subtly, but is under the surface about identity politics and progressive thinkings or wokeness and the like, that would be quite happy to see this happen. It could be, but like I said, I don't know. I mean, I could see it being that Disney will not entertain anything until it's closer to the end of the deal. That could be the case. That mm-hmm. could be true. Does that mean that the show's in trouble or not in trouble? Not necessarily. I think at the moment, I suppose what I'm trying to say is I think we have to detach the qualifiers of whether Doctor Who's good anymore, which is kind of sitting on the tail end of this discussion, not necessarily between us two, but generally speaking.
Yeah.
Is this an indication that Doctor Who is done wrong now? And I don't think that's the question in here. I think if you took Capaldi's Doctor, put him in this situation, we could be in the same situation. Maybe, who knows, if Matt Smith was being done now, even with Stephen Moffat behind, like Russell T. Davies is behind Gatwa, in the jigsaw puzzle it's now trying to fit, would it fit? Is it too niche and obscure and bizarre? Is it now too fractured, two separate audiences, younger audiences, which not all of them, as you've noted yourself, seem to be quite interested in it. Older audiences seem a bit mixed. So there's a lot of things against it. I don't know. I just don't think it's easy to say whether this is a qualifier of whether Doctor Who's done wrong or whether it's just simply the Doctor Who as a show doesn't neatly fit into the standard package for the amount it costs in this massive saturated streaming age to reap the benefits that both Disney and the BBC want. Maybe it just can't do it. Or maybe it isn't good. I mean, I don't know. As I say, I'm careful not to qualify. And the last season I quite liked, but I didn't love. So I've got no stake in the game here, no skin in the game, I suppose is the term. But I'm just very cautious about, there feels to be a lot of judgments on whether it was any good and then looking to what happens now to prove it. I think the only thing it could prove is whether Doctor Who has a broad appeal, generally speaking. I'm not convinced unless you've got someone with a massive global stardom, which perhaps isn't so progressive. Maybe then, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, Strange New Worlds for Star Trek and Discovery. Discovery was loathed. I don't find the writing for Strange New Worlds that much different. And yet it's far more, but I don't know. It's still pretty progressive in its own way. I don't know. I think that's the thing. The thing at the moment we're just going to say is, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows? Well, who knows indeed. What I'm wondering is if maybe it's, there's something in all of these things, and small elements of all of these things are factoring into a general feeling. I was speaking to Philip Bates a couple of days ago for next week's podcast, and I mentioned Midsummer Murders, and he said, is that still on? And I mean, yes, it is. But that's the point, isn't it? Doctor Who is still on. Doctor Who does still get... Doctor Who gets that same... Is it still on? It's fallen out of the public consciousness of this, of the Eccleston, Tennant, Matt Smith era. Mm. It's not... Even people don't really refer to it anymore in other things.
No.
Which is... it's become a bit of the furniture. You know, people don't really refer to soap operas, they don't refer to the news particularly, or specific long-running comedies. Have I got news for you?
So Christian, do they refer to anything? Your list is long.
My list is very well. Exactly, that's the point, isn't it? Because my list is very long. But all of these things are able to reinvent themselves, whether they are weekly shows with different guests, or if they're long, ongoing storylines with different with changing casts and development storylines, new plots, etc. Doctor Who can't do that, obviously, because it's a long-running drama, but it's serialized and it's grouped in seasons for budgetary reasons. Obviously, it can't be a soap opera in the ongoing weekly soap opera format.
But then I would say, and I would argue, that are we seeing the end of the soap opera?
Well,
because where if Terrestrial goes, I mean, in fairness, Neighbours on Freevee did very well. It's just that Freevee is being disbanded by Prime, and that's why it's going. So that's not to say there isn't interest, but there is a question of, you know, who is engaging with these things. And you're right. Midsommar's Murders, and I know you're not making this comparison, is an interesting one because its sustainability can exist because compared to the costs of Doctor Who, and I'm not saying for a moment Midsommar's Murders isn't an expensive show, as most shows are, but compared to, I suspect, what Doctor Who's kind of costing now, especially if they're going to Disney to help support that, that's a hefty price. It's going to have a decent return for that sort of investment. While Midsommar's Murders will have a global value because it's got a sort of certain Englishness to it, or Britishness to it. Detective is an ongoing genre which never seems to, or murder mysteries is a genre which doesn't seem to die. To avoid the
ironically the enough.
Yeah, ironically enough. So something like that can sustain. Doctor Who has kind of always been, to a degree, a high stakes, well, no, since 2005, it's always been a high stakes game in a small pond market.
Yeah.
And there's no Amy Pond pun there as well, for anyone who thinks I make that sort of nerdy joke. I am disgusted. That does not happen. That does not come through my lips. It is a small pond, and now it's now filing. We talked about this for years. Even when Brian was around, we were talking about this. You know, does Doctor Who have to move away from broadcasting and find a space elsewhere in the films or in streaming? And it feels a little too late. They've tried to, but then I don't know, is it a little too late? Because I know it's got a lot of love around the world. But it is still a 20-year-old show on its most recent incarnation. That is a long time.
It is a long time
to sustain interest.
But if we go back to Midsommar, though, started in 1997, so it's been going longer than New Who. Mm-hmm. It's still got interest around the world, but it does. It has shorter seasons, it has longer episodes, so they're all 90 minutes long. They take up a two-hour slot on the TV. It's built a niche in specific markets, and it's developed those markets.
The difference is, I would say, is that Midsommar's Murders has got almost like a mandate to not change, that it's kind of trying to, and I know it does change, but it's kind of got to feel like it's doing the same thing. Well, Doctor Who has this weird, almost self-destructive but necessary mandate that the reason it survives is because it literally does change, and not just the actor, but the style and the tone. It's got to find ways to revitalize itself against what it's previously done. And sometimes that's worked really well. And sometimes, like with arguably Colin Baker, I know it's an unfair comparison for poor Colin fans, but I think even he would admit the way that they did his seasons were kind of trying to initially contrast the sort of gentleness of Davidson with a sort of more irritable, ferocious, and almost British parody of the angry idiot in Colin Baker. And it just didn't work. Audiences didn't seem to really get that. And so, but it's always got to do that. So at the moment, you can kind of see what it's trying to do. It's trying to, again, revitalize itself, push in a different direction, cause a little controversy, which is always good for a show, and hopefully revitalize its market. But how many times can you do it? And to be honest, the other factor it's got is it's revitalizing, it's only to some degree being progressive within its own canon market, because there are a lot of shows out there with actors who either are people of color, or who are leads now are people of color, or leads who are certainly playing very sort of queer characters regardless of who they are as actors. And that's not unusual in today's market. In the last 10 years, there's a lot of shows which do that. Yeah. So it's very hard for it. It almost feels like it kind of at the moment fits in with the sort of the output you see from the streamers, but doesn't stand out from the output of the streamers. Because it's caught up a bit. But is that enough to give it the oomph that is needed to bring back the return that the BBC and Disney want? I don't know. I'm hoping that this is just people sort of going, we've heard rumours of Shooty potentially going, this looks like a good story of doom. We're coming up to the new series. Maybe we, you know, there's a legitimate question here is, will Disney do another one?
Yeah.
And we've not heard anything, ergo, is nothing happening? And if is Davis just legitimately sort of coming back and going, no, we would be waiting another season. That's always been the argument. We'd know by the end of two seasons whether they'd want to renew. It's too early to say. Is that true? Or it could be that, as you say, there are internal rumblings or problems which is slowly filtering out to journalists who know people who sit in bars and pubs who tell them stuff or know stuff on the down low. And there is legitimacy here. I can't say. I could see it being either way. I think that's what I mean. I don't think Doctor Who particularly stands out compared to everything else out there, not in the way that perhaps it needs to. And I mean, how many things do we see get cancelled left, right and centre now, which are legitimately good shows or certainly had an audience? I didn't watch the Willow series. Don't know if you watched it. Did you watch the Willow series?
There was a Willow series?
Well, exactly. No, I mean, it had a following. It was very authentic to the film.
Right.
I didn't watch it, but I know there's a lot of people who liked it and they not just cancelled it, but for tax purposes, it was erased from the Disney catalogue. It's no longer there. You can't find it. So, you know, these things happen to some legitimately very good shows, but it still happens because the expectations, and again, depending on the costs, ride these things. And maybe to some degree, there's a danger for Doctor Who making a partner of, you know, a globally, of high, you know, a commercial rather than public service corporate system, which is ruthless. It's, you know, it's a private company. If you don't do what it's anticipating, then that's it. While a public service doesn't. So it's kind of stepped into the big boys realm, and that can be potentially maybe a dangerous place for it. It's a risk, a roll of the dice, and maybe, yeah, it hasn't paid off, which I think would be a shame. Mm. But as we've said many times before, it's a far harder space now for something like Doctor Who to exist because it's a different world. We're not in that broadcast family-friendly world. Not really.
We have been over this many times before and we have discussed Doctor Who's long-term format, and aside from the episode counts changing, nothing really has changed, has it?
No, that's true. I mean, I know I've not really watched any of the stuff, trailers closely, but I kind of like the poster which went out, because we've said this for years. I know I have, and I think we've all agreed. The whole idea of trying to get someone home rather than it just being a backpackers, trip across Europe, which is kind of felt since 2005. That feels like a little different, but again, it's nothing new. It's no more than an Ian and Barbara or Tegan Javanka. It's not new, but for the new series, it feels new because it has been doing the same a lot, which maybe that is a conversation which we have kind of had, but not much recently, is if Doctor Who is struggling now, is part of the problem that for the last 20 years, through multiple different showrunners, it has remained largely the same format. The series always start up, you know, new companion. There's always a sense of going somewhere first in the past or the future. Then there's the episode where there's a bit of a contention.
Almost by numbers. Up towards
it feels very much by numbers. No matter who the showrunner is, it's kind of done that. And, you know, there was a couple of breakouts of this. The Flux perhaps tried to break out a bit, but it's that weird thing of history repeating itself. You know, is Flux the trial of the Time Lord? Is that kind of, it's almost timing is almost there.
Yeah. And the presence of the Rani as well. Potentially.
In the Flux?
No, now.
Oh, now. Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah, I see what you mean.
All we need is question mark jumpers. So again, yeah, let us know what you think about that. And it may be that more becomes apparent over the next few weeks, or it may not be. Maybe that the BBC just wants to rest Doctor Who. But of course, they rested Doctor Who in 1989 and had every intention of reviving the series. But they didn't manage it for 7 years, or 16 years, depending on how you look at it. So that's Doctor Who. And as I say, we've got more Doctor Who material coming up in future weeks, so look out for that, please. Something that's almost as old as Doctor Who, or a little bit older than Doctor Who, I should say, are the Beatles. And there's a, you may remember, but around 25 years ago, there was a series of, it wasn't 25 years ago, why is it called the 25th anniversary reissue? How odd is that? So around 30 years ago, there was a TV series called The Beatles Anthology, and it was followed by a book called The Beatles Anthology, which is a big, heavy book. I think it was around 40 or 50 pounds at the time for the hardback. It's listed as £40 now for the paperback version of this new 25th anniversary reissue, which is apparently set for release on November the 20th this year. Pracy here, from the years growing up in Liverpool through their ride to fame to their ultimate breakup, here is the inside story interwoven with the Beatles' own memories are the recollections of such associates as road manager Neil Aspinall, producer George Martin and spokesman Derek Taylor. The Beatles anthology is a once-in-a-lifetime volume, warm, frank, funny, poignant and bold, just like the music that's been part of so many of our lives. Now, obviously, the Beatles did a whole anthology thing. They did the TV series and the DVD releases. I beg your pardon, the CD releases, the album releases on CD and vinyl and cassette at the time, because everything was on CD, vinyl and cassette in the mid-1990s. Now, the interesting thing is I've been waiting for a reissue of the DVD, because I don't even know if it actually did come out on DVD. It definitely came out on VHS, but I didn't have that. I recorded it off the TV, as people did with things back in those days. Just a quick technical side note there. I blacked the tape first, which is a process that you used to do with VHS when you record the null channel. So basically a new tape, or even a tape that had been reused, you'd record just black on that cassette and then record what you wanted to keep. And 9 times out of 10, you would end up with a reasonably good copy of the tape. Unfortunately, my tapes have become slightly distressed over the years, and unfortunately the VHSs of my copy of the Beatles Anthology TV series, which I think was 6 parts, have failed due to things like mould and that sort of thing. The big question is there going to be a reissue of the TV series as well? Because it was a really good series, full of good interviews with McCartney and Ringo Starr and George Harrison and various other people involved. And the way it was edited together, it kind of predated a lot of what Peter Jackson did with his recent Beatles projects. Some people have suggested maybe Jackson's already doing this, already working on a remaster of it, but who knows? Actually, I'm reminded it's an eight part series, not 6 part series. So yeah, that's definitely something I want to see again. I trawl the CEX shops, although apparently I'm told it's actually pronounced sex on the continent, but us being British, we call it CEX or Kex, because obviously we don't want to say we're going to the sex shop. So I regularly troll CEX looking for a copy of the DVD version of the Beatles Anthology, which may or may not exist. I can't quite remember, as I say. Never been able to find it. So hopefully that is something that's going to be coming along with the book, the DVD, and maybe a brand new vinyl edition as well, with it, you know, the new heavy vinyl that everyone's using, even though it adds absolutely nothing to the sound. It sounds like something that would be a good opportunity for this 25th anniversary reissue of the book, but I think it's 30 years since the TV series in, I'm pretty sure it's around 1995. I'm not looking this up because it's going to distract me from what we're doing, but I recall being in a particular place when the anthology was on, and I'm pretty sure it was 1995 or 1996 or 97, around that sort of time. So yeah, a new edition of that would be great. And speaking of the Beatles, which I was kind of getting to eventually. There's a really, really, you know, a few weeks ago we talked about, there was a David Bowie lost tape that I discussed with you. And I found it, yeah, it was really interesting that a lost tape should turn up of David Bowie's Young American tracks. And then I think a couple of weeks ago, the last time I spoke on a solo show, I'm pretty sure there was another lost tape had turned up. Oh, there was lost episodes of... Yes, that's right. There was a lost Talking Heads session tape found. Well, guess what? There's a lost Beatles tape has been discovered. Vancouver's Neptune Records discovered a rare Beatles audition recording. A gentleman called Rob Frith was wrapping up work at a friend's studio, and he decided to put on one last tape for a listen labelled Beatles 60s Demos. It had been sitting around the record shop in Vancouver, unplayed, for quite some time. I thought it was just a reel-to-reel tape that somebody had put bootleg things on. But he played it and says it seemed like the Beatles were in the room. Now, what this tape was is an audition tape that the Beatles sent out. This is the tape, or a version of the tape, that Decca famously turned down before the Beatles eventually signed to EMI. So this tape's been sat around for quite some time, and... Frith is a collector. He regularly gets new tapes from collections. So he knows what he's looking at, and he knows what he's got in his hands, but he doesn't know where it's come from, because he deals with such a lot of these sort of collections that are handed down, or you know, from people's collections, maybe stores closing, establishments closing, warehouses closing, whatever, people passing perhaps, and they've been available at auction. He's ended up with this tape, this rare Beatles demo tape. He's not eager to sell it, though. Although he does say that if Paul McCartney were to come to his store in person, he'd hand it over. It's incredible, isn't it, how all these classic group bands, their material's just turning up in these strange kind of ways, these archives, accidental playbacks, recordings at the end of session tapes and that kind of thing. It's really, really interesting. I think that they turn up when they do, and it's nice for them to bring a bit of they bring a bit more depth and character to these stories of these different bands. I am of the opinion that modern pop music, or mainstream music, let's say, is pretty much a shallow pond of vapors, basically. It's completely disposable, means absolutely nothing on the whole. At the same time, we've got this other music industry that's existing at exactly the same time, full of talented, well-rehearsed, well-played artists that are touring around the countries, putting out amazing music. I mean, you know, we've had, you know, Ed Sheeran and other singer-songwriters, but they're the tip of the iceberg of the actual talent that's actually out there touring. You can hear people like this, the type of people I'm talking about, on Spotify, and a lot of them have massive followings. It's incredible that they don't have bigger followings, really. And I mean, this is a conversation for another time, but there obviously isn't a top 40 that means anything these days. All the you know, what we used to term the hit parade is basically Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon plays and radio play, and they don't particularly mean an awful lot in terms of contemporary music, because contemporary acts don't get the recognition they deserve unless they are prepared to do the music industry thing. And at the same time, a lot of older groups, Beatles, Talking Heads, Bowie, whatever, they're all doing really well on streaming services. And as a result of that, they occasionally trouble the top sellers. It's an interesting state of affairs that music from 60 years ago is more popular at times than brand new music. It really shouldn't be that way. As I say, it's a discussion for another time. Sound effect here, I think. Okay, yeah, let's head over to Facebook and have a look and see what Film is Fabulous has been doing lately. And yes, they have got a new podcast series. This is a relatively short podcast. They have various events over the years, and they've decided to start packaging some of their interviews up into podcasts, which is good. It's about time, I think. The first one of these is available at filmisfabulous.org.uk/cultural significance. And I believe that there's going to be a few of these. So I would suggest you check that out and bookmark all the Film is Fabulous media so you can keep tabs on that. It's this particular discussion was recorded at an event in Leicester in 2023. And Film is Fabulous team member John Franklin explains why the feedback they received after their first event led to last month's six-month pilot scheme, which we've discussed on here several times. So, yeah, if the Film is Fabulous work, their recovery and archival work, if that's something that interests you, then do go and check that out. Now, something else I've spotted, Toby Haydock's long-awaited history of the Quatermass experiment is coming to trade paperback format in May. Illustrated with rare and unseen studio photographs from the Nigel Neal estate, it's available to order, and there will be two launch events, one on the 11th of May, that's a Sunday, at 532 Arch 19 Watson Street, Manchester M3 4LP. That one features Blue Peter's Abby Cook interviewing Toby. And on Monday the 19th, a few week or so later, at the BFI's Rubin Library at BFI South Bank in London, that's the Quatermass Experiment book launch and Q&A, which will be chaired by Lisa Kerrigan, who's Senior Creator of Television at the BFI National Archive. This looks like one of those must-have types of books for anyone who's interested in Quatermass, and particularly the Quatermass Experiment. So do check those out if you're available to attend. The link to ordering the book is also included in the show notes. It's $19.99, and as you can pre-order it now, or as we used to say, order it now. And this is specifically about the six-part serial, The Quatermass Experiment, that was broadcast live in 1953. Rather than any of the other versions of the story. So, yeah, go and check that out. Quick Patreon update now. First of all, thank you to everyone who took the time to engage with our Adrian Munsey interview last week. As I record this evening, the first episode of Wonderland Science Fiction in the Atomic Age is going out on Sky Arts. Please, I really do hope you've watched it. And if you haven't, then please try and get it on one of the catch-up services, on Now TV or whatever. It really is really, really good. And it follows through over the next few weeks. The first episode is Mary Shelley to Isaac Asimov. The second is Arthur C. Clarke to Ray Bradbury. That's on April 10th. Margaret Atwood to Ted Chiang, April the 17th. And Quatermass to Christopher Nolan, April the 24th. If you didn't already catch the Adrian Munsey interview, by the way, you know, we've got a video version of it on our Patreon. That's only on our Patreon. So if you join the Patreon, you can view it there. Otherwise, we released it in its entirety on both Patreon and Spotify, because we're big fans of what he's done with the Wonderland documentary series, and think everyone should benefit from his wise words. Okay, I want to finish off with something that I've already published on Casterbus. I find it to be quite fascinating. This is Battle of Britain and how video games are becoming platforms for historical storytelling. So I happened across a new documentary series on YouTube. It's quite short. It's in 15-minute segments or so. It's called A Lens On, Battle of Britain. And it's... I mean, I should probably say that I'll praise you this slightly, that I've become increasingly interested in the Second World War over the past few years. My granddad fought in World War II. He passed away in 1996. And I didn't really know much about his activities in the war or anything, really. It was just something that was accepted and that was it. He never spoke about it. Having looked into what he did during the war, it's and where he went and what happened to his colleagues, it's quite clear why he never spoke about it. Now, he wasn't his special ops or anything like that. He wasn't Ian Fleming or John Pertwee or anything like that. But he was involved with the European campaign. And this interest has grown, and I've checked out podcasts like Al Murray and James Holland's We Have Ways of Making You Talk, which I would recommend to everyone, in fact, because he's a really good podcast. But I'm very much interested in terms of my granddad, the land war, and those manoeuvres that took place on land and all these various land battles, not so much what took place in the air. World War II really was the first real air war, and Scramble, Battle of Britain, is a game from Slytherin Games which offers a fresh perspective on the aerial combat that came to define World War II. And they've launched this documentary series, and the documentaries are, which kicks off with an edition, episode one called Aces of the Air. This documentary looks at the part that these lads, who were just 21, the average age of a pilot was 21 in World War II, and the part that these guys played in defending Britain from the aerial onslaught of the Nazi war machine, and all these bombers heading over Britain's main cities and its industrial centres, and these dogfights that took place over them. Now, what's really interesting is that it kind of brings a bit of, it brings to life that these guys were real people. You know, they weren't just ciphers in movies or comic strips. They were real guys, real people with real expectations and ambitions. And so you get historians like Victoria Taylor and Paul Beaver, and you also get insights from the game and how the game has sought or is seeking to represent the activities, the different characters and the characteristics of different airmen and different craft, and capture the strategic and personal challenges faced by the pilots. It's a very intriguing and interesting way of approaching what is essentially a flight sim. Now, back in the day, I used to play a game on the Amiga 30, 35 years ago called Wings. That was a World War One game. And I think there's probably an element of Wings in Scramble. It's a game I'm really, really intrigued to take a proper look at. But in the meantime, I would recommend you have a look at this documentary series that Slytherin Games is producing. It's essentially, it's a promotional campaign for its game. But they've done it so well that I really think you should check it out. And with that, we get towards the end of this week's podcast. Thanks to James for popping in earlier on. And look out for next week's edition, in which I speak to Philip Bates about Doctor Who Series 15. Mainly, we're sticking to the episodes, and we're staying away from any of the controversy around the show and what may be happening to Doctor Who over the next few weeks. We've also got a few irons in the fire with regard to interviews and guests over the next few weeks as well, so keep an eye out for that. News first, as ever, on the Patreon. So if you want to know what we've got coming up, if you want to know what's going on next, and if you want to chat, if you want to send us messages directly, you can get us via the Patreon. So please do that. Okay, that's it for this time. I will be back next week with Philip Bates. Until then, it's goodbye from us.